This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Coming later, we'll talk with Jim Nickel, veteran lobbyist now with Corson Nickel, but not so long ago, Jim was the chair of the Louisiana Democratic Party. We begin with a conversation about the Louisiana Book Festival. It's this Saturday. The 2017 Louisiana Book Festival is the 14th edition of a free, world-class literary celebration, 10 to 5, with locations at the State Library, the State Capitol, the Capitol Park Museum, and other nearby locations. And one of those who will be on hand is our leadoff guest, Jenny Lightwise-Scoff. She teaches English at the University of Mississippi, Ole Miss, Southern, African American, and American literature of the last three centuries. She earned her Ph.D. in English from the University of Rochester, also spent some time teaching at Tulane University, and she is here to talk, along with others, about small screen Souths, and it is an interesting conversation topic, and for those who would like to see Jenny, and perhaps she'll expand on what she says here this morning, she'll be at the House Committee Room 3 at 2:30 on Saturday afternoon, House Committee Room 3 at the State Capitol. Good morning, Jenny Lightwise-Scoff.
Good morning, Jim. How you doing?
Doing well. Well, tell us about the focus of your presentation. You are a person who has written about a lot of different things, but this is something you know well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My friends, Lisa Henriksen, Gina Kaysen, and Stephanie Roundtree, 2 years ago, they started putting together a collection of essays for a book called Small Screen Souths. And it was at the time, you know, there were a lot of books coming out about, like, the film credits in Louisiana and the kind of emerging Hollywood South logic that we, you know, I've spent most of my adult life in Louisiana, so things that we know well, right? But what they were interested in as literary scholars was about thinking about what appears on screen, what images of the South are consumed by the rest of the nation. And so in this collection, there are essays about some of the reality television that, you know, came out around that time, Duck Dynasty, Cajun Palm Stars, Swamp People, those kinds of representations. But also some of the kind of representations of the haunted South,
yeah,
Walking Dead and True Blood and True Detective, those gothic representations. And then my essay is about the urban South and how cities are represented on screen. And I look at two shows, both by David Simon on HBO, The Wire and Treme. And I think about these two places, Baltimore and New Orleans, as the kind of borders of the South.
Well, how do you think the South is presented in those presentations, The Wire and Treme? Is it an accurate presentation?
So what I think is interesting about those two shows is that they're about cities. And The Wire has been taken as the kind of iconic representation of a failing American city, so much that in my field, which is English and urban studies, that there are whole classes taught about The Wire. I taught one at Tulane, actually, an entire class about The Wire. And Treme, because it's about New Orleans, is never seen as an iconic text about the American city, because New Orleans is always described as considerably different than other American cities, as exceptional. So what I was interested in doing was in putting those two shows together and in thinking about what they have to say about cities writ large and about cities in the American and Southern context. Mm-hmm. And essentially what I argue is that we might follow the coast of the U.S. and follow the coast of the South and think about how Southern identity is made in water instead of on land.
Based on what we see on the small screen, do the stereotypes about the South persist because, or is this a way to perhaps erase some of those stereotypes?
I would say there are different kinds of essays in this collection, and some are really interested in exploring the stereotypes, right, through some of the reality show representations of Louisiana in particular. And so those are interested in, like, you know, there's a way that people who are on those television shows are commodifying aspects of their lives and identities and the places that they're from. There's a way that they're playing with the stereotype, right, because mm-hmm. the stereotype will sell a product. No question.
Well, the two cities, go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, but in my essay, you know, I'm more interested in this kind of the social critique that comes out in The Wire and Treme, whether it's of kind of like a post-industrial city that no longer has high-paying jobs for skilled workers, and then the critique that's coming out that comes out in Treme of the kind of the response to Katrina. So there are definitely there's some essays in this collection that are interested in kind of treating that stereotype. But mine is more in the kind of, in other ways that the shows critique social phenomenon.
The two cities you focus upon, Baltimore and New Orleans, have much in common. They were among the five largest cities in America in 1800. They are no longer. They are certainly on waterways and have a feel to them that is distinct to those cities. But you say there are some distinctions as well.
Mm-hmm. So David Simon, who makes the two shows, Treme and The Wire, is not from New Orleans, and he's only sort of from Baltimore. I mean, he spent quite a bit of his life there, working as a journalist for the Baltimore Sun. And I think that the reason why The Wire was taken as a kind of a perfect representation of the social problems in American cities is because he doesn't have much reverence for Baltimore. You know, you don't have a lot of reverence for the place that you're from. You're able to represent what's negative about it and what's positive, too. But I think part of the issue and a reason why, you know, I lived in the Treme for a while. Part of the reason why New Orleanians, I think that I've encountered and that I've lived among, don't much like Treme. I think it actually approaches the city too reverently, right? Too mythically rather than in the kind of gritty, realistic, jaundiced, skeptical way that he approached Baltimore, which is the place that, you know, that he's more or less from.
New Orleans has this appeal to people who don't live there, and of course, many live there because they love it. But it's also a city with a lot of turbulence and turmoil, as we know. Do you think, on the whole, it's presented accurately to the masses?
No. I think there's a way that no city besides New Orleans is so interested in selling itself to the outside world, right? You know, we're in the mayor's race right now in New Orleans, and I should note I split my time between Memphis and New Orleans, so I still have a foot in the city. And there's always an interest in, you know, for politicians there in particular, economic development is tourism, right? That's like, mm-hmm. We don't talk about other jobs in the same way. We talk about like marketing ourselves to the outside world. But if you look at actually the seasons of The Wire, which is about Baltimore, the five seasons are respectively about the drug trade, the ports and docks, the schools, and a failing newspaper. And if you take those descriptions neutrally, those are all problems that New Orleans has suffered in the last decade, right? Of course, we have like an entrenched black market economy and crime. We have massive controversies about schooling, charterization, and privatization in our schools. We had a failing newspaper. Sorry to the Times-Picayune, but you know they abridged their publication schedule. And then we also have this question. You know, for a long time, the docks and ports, the stevedores, and the kind of industrial port, that was the city's industry. But then, you know, tourism has taken over. So if you look at that kind of neutral description of The Wire, I think you see that Baltimore and New Orleans actually have a great deal in common. And the difference between them may be that New Orleans is often asked to perform for the outside world, right? To perform as a place where people take vacations and relax and they don't have to think about all of those pressing social problems. But in fact, we've been a laboratory for a lot of solutions to those social problems, and we've been a laboratory for post-industrial labor and economies, is how I'd put it.
All right. A listener asks about the presentations or depictions of the South on the small screen as opposed to the big screen. Are there differences?
Yeah. I mean, I'd actually say, looking at this collection, it seems that like the representations of the South in the last 10 to 20 years have been small screen rather than big screen. The big screen, I think, has been overtaken in a way by reboots, remakes, comic book adaptations, and a lot of the innovation in our popular culture is going on the small screen. So I think it's there that you might look to see how the South is being imagined.
Well, it'll be quite an event Saturday with authors from all over the United States convening at the state capitol and the area around it. And one of those is Jenny Lightweiskopf. She is a professor of English at Ole Miss, formerly at Tulane University. She knows New Orleans well, still lives part of the year there. And she will be featured at the House Committee Room 3 at 2:30 on Saturday afternoon. Professor Lightweiskopf, it's been a pleasure to talk with you.
Thank you so much. Pleasure talking to you, too.
And we'll be back with Jim Nickel after this pause on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us. Ali Baltazar is producing. The show is Talk Louisiana, and your numbers are 297-5633 in Baton Rouge, and outside the area, toll-free 877-217-5757. You can send us an email at talk@talklouisiana.org. Jim Nickel, the veteran lobbyist, is in the house. His company is Corson Nickel, and they represent many clients that do business in the state of Louisiana. But Jim, prior to this, was the chair of the Louisiana Democratic Party and executive director prior to that, and he left about 20 years ago to embark on a new chapter in his life, but left quite a mark. When he left in 1996, this was a solidly blue state, and now, as we know, it's a solidly red state, and we'll talk about many things with Jim. But let's start there. What happened in the last two decades?
Well, I'll tell you, first of all, it's great to be with you and your listeners. It's good to be back on the Jim Inkster Show. It's been a while.
And I might add, it's Talk Louisiana
I'm
now.
I'm sorry,
but,
Talk Louisiana.
But I might add that Jim is a former board chair at WRKF as well and was the chair for 1 year when I was the station manager.
That's right. And I did a lot of time on public television radio board, and then I did some time on public radio board and always – want to support our public radio stations, and I'm glad to be on this morning. Yeah, so back then, I mean, we were actually unique to some extent in that most of the South had gone Republican, and we had held on in Louisiana pretty well. I mean, we had two U.S. senators. We had a pretty good run on governors. We didn't have Governor Fawcett. We didn't have a Democratic governor other than Edwards until Blanco came along, which was after me. But we did. We had, I think, a moderate Democratic Party that identified with a lot of Louisianians in the mode of John Brough, the DLC mode, mm-hmm. the Bill Clinton mode, and we sort of lost that image at some point, and it's been tough since, no question.
Well, Bill Clinton was president, yeah. and the economy was good, yeah. and he was, for all intents, a moderate Southern Democrat. Right. That helped the cause, didn't
sure.
it?
Sure. Oh, sure. I mean, you know, I remember when he was telling us he was going to run for president as governor of Arkansas, we were all kind of giggling at these DLC events, and here he comes along and wins, and he did. He provided a national environment for Democrats that allowed them, I think, to succeed in certain instances in the South, and that has not been the case since, and it's been tough.
But I remember when you were party chair, you were a little perplexed that Clinton, being the moderate Southern Democrat that he was, he started off, if you remember, put gays in the military, and to embark on a national health care plan. And both of those were not considered moderate stances.
And he did the
time.
Assault weapons ban also. Yeah. So he got elected in 92, and in 94, the Democrats got wiped out, lost the House and the Senate. That was the new Gingrich rise. And we were all called to the White House. I told you that story before where the president thanked us for our great service, and then the First Lady came in and told us we had basically – messed everything up, but we kind of realized it was more their issues than our operations. But, you know, back when I was there, and we had a big team there, we had a lot of folks that worked on it. We were sort of on the cutting edge at the time of coordinated campaigns. That's back when we decided we would pool our money and we would poll together mm-hmm. as Democrats. We would do direct mail together as Democrats. We did phone banks together. We had sort of learned this model in other states and brought it here. Jim Brady, who's now the federal judge, mm-hmm. had been there, Hal Killshaw, and Ben Jeffers, and there's a whole lot of folks. I'm going to leave names out, but we all kind of we embraced this new sort of group funding, group thinking, and group effort, and it paid off, and we were able to be successful for a while.
And in your farewell, Bill Clinton carried our state by more than 200,000 votes. Mm-hmm. It wasn't close over Bob Dole and Ross Perot. And he's the last Democrat to win a presidential election in Louisiana. And on the same ballot, Mary Loretta Landrieu defeated Woody Jenkins, Lewis L. Wood Jenkins, by 5,788 votes. That was a big win. She lasted three terms, but could she win today with her politics as we know it?
Well, we saw she didn't, and it's difficult. I mean, she had earned a lot of seniority in Washington, which inured to the state's benefit. We've seen that in a number of funding areas that the state needs, in coastal areas and in other areas. But it's a very, very difficult time for Democrats in the South and in Louisiana. It would be hard for her to win, no question.
Yeah, when you look at the U.S. Senate, it's almost devoid of any Democrats in the Deep South. There's right. Bill Nelson in Florida, and that's about it.
That's about it, yeah.
And when you were there, there were some Democrats who were still standing.
Yeah, I mean, we
John Breaux
was there, and you had folks like Senator Nelson from Nebraska. I know it's not the South, but
and had Pryor and Bumpers in Arkansas, yep. and there were some other states with Southern Democrats. But
Sam Nunn from
Sam
Georgia.
Yeah, exactly right. But the day of a Blue Dog Democrat winning a seat in the South, it appears to be gone for a while. And when a party, a national party, cedes a whole area of the country, it makes it difficult.
It does, and certainly they have to refocus. I mean, clearly this last election, this presidential election, makes it, I think, clear to Democrats. They've got to speak to working people. They've got to speak to traditional Democratic voters who have become frustrated with the process. They've lost faith in government. They've lost faith in a lot of institutions in our society. And they're turning to someone like Donald Trump, who is able to voice their frustrations. I'm not sure he's able to solve their frustrations. I don't think he is at all. But he's able to articulate them, and as a result, they vote for people like him. And if the Democrats don't learn to speak to those people better, they're going to stay where they are.
But the party has evolved to the point that in 1976, Jimmy Carter carried all 11 SEC states, mm-hmm. all 11 of them, from Missouri to Florida, everything in between. In 2016, as in last year, Donald Trump carried every one of those states and carried all of them by big margins, with the exception of Florida, which was close. But he won all the states that Carter won in 1976, a complete turnover in 40 years.
Well, 40 years is a long time, and times change, and parties have evolved into organizations that articulate issues that Southerners have issues with, and I understand that. And that's why I think back when Senator Breaux and some of the moderates were in charge of the party, we had more of a focus on blue-collar issues, family issues, and things of that I think moderate central voters wanted us to pay attention to. We've gotten away from that, and I think if we want to win again, you got to get back to that, and that will take some discipline. But right now, I don't think either party has much of a handle on what's going on in this country, and as a result, I think we're going to see more and more independent Republicans, independent Democrats, or even independent candidates rising more and more. You can do it now. You don't need as much party money. Social media, other free media opportunities give you that chance.
There are some Republicans now criticizing President Trump, Jeff Flake, John McCain, Bob Corker, but they're not running. But John Kennedy and Bill Cassidy are not criticizing the president. If anything, they're praising him. Does that make good political sense on their part?
Well, he got more votes in Louisiana than David Vitter and John Bel Edwards combined. I mean, he has the largest vote getter in the history of Louisiana, talking about Donald mm-hmm. Trump. So maybe it is politically expedient to be a part of his administration. Look, I take away the environmental issues, the budget issues, the health care issues, all of the issues. My problem with President Trump is his behavior. I think, and I like to think, regardless of party, that our leaders try to appeal to the best in us. I don't think he does that. I think he's trying to poke at different interest groups and different people in this country, and to inure to his benefit as opposed to inure to the country's benefit. And so, you know, I don't even want to talk about the issues. My greater concern is what he's doing to the presidency. I knew he was going to be unconventional. I actually embraced the fact that he might shake up Washington, so to speak. But the way he's gone about doing it, I'm not really surprised, because I saw him on The Apprentice and I see what kind of person mm-hmm. he is. What surprises me is how many people are allowing it to continue. There are some Republicans standing up to him, but it'll take a lot more before anything changes. But he will never change. He's not going to change at all.
We're 9 months and 6 days into the Trump presidency, day 280. So if he serves his full 4 years, and at this point it appears that he will until further notice, that would mean there are 39 months to go. And if he goes 8 years, that would mean that there are 87 months to go, Jim Nickel. The country, in many ways, I think, is exhausted. Remember, we heard about Clinton fatigue. I think we're going to get a case of Trump fatigue very soon.
Well, I think our country can survive anything. I'm not worried about the future of America. I am concerned about the impression he gives to some of our youth as to what kind of president we should have.
877-217-5757 is your number, 297-5633. You're listening to Talk Louisiana on 89.3 WRKF, and we're talking to the veteran lobbyist, former Democratic Party Chair Jim Nickel. We'll return with Jim after this pause for the news with Karen Henderson on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us. Ali Baltazar is producing. Jim Nickel is with us. It's been a while since we talked on air with Jim, and it's always good to get his take. One of the most articulate people who is in Louisiana politics, but he is in politics now as a lobbyist. But in the day, he was quite a spokesman for the Democratic Party, and I think your mentor, John Breaux, probably laments that you didn't run for office, Jim Nickel. Did you ever give that thought?
I did. I gave it a lot of thought, and Senator Breaux encouraged me to look at it, and it just didn't work out timing-wise. It's something that I've always aspired to do at some point when I was younger, and it really is a desire to serve. I think public office and politics is a worthy and noble calling. I admire people who do it, regardless of party, regardless of position, and I do have some regret that I never did. But life takes different turns, and it didn't work out for me. But I love being in the process, mm-hmm. and I love working with the people. Senator Breaux certainly taught me that politics is a people business. You got to be nice to everybody. You got to work with everyone because the only way you're going to get anything done is as a group. And so I try to follow that model in my lobbying business and sometimes sit in bed at night and wonder what could have been. But that's bygones. 55 now, so
55, but we just elected a man who was 70 at the time to the presidency,
yeah.
and that was his first race.
Yeah. So maybe there's hope. I'm not Trump, but, you know, we'll see.
877-217-5757 or 297-5633 for Jim Nickel, former chair of the Louisiana Democratic Party. Rinaldi on Bluebonnet. Rinaldi, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning, Jim. Good morning. Good morning, Mr. Nickel.
Good morning.
Quick questions. A couple of rapid fire here. Number one, do you think that President Trump merely exposed many of the underlying fissures of race, class, and in America? And just one other thing, Jim and I are about the same age, 56. From the first time I was able to vote, there's always been a Bush or a Clinton, with the exception of President Obama, on the ticket. That's a long run, Jim, since 1980. So you're talking about how the South has flipped and all that stuff. So isn't politics, Jim, moving a little bit more to the left with the millennials and things of that nature? So, number one, has President Trump exposed underlying fissures of race and class? And then number two, are the millennials pulling us a little bit more to the left?
Well, in your first question, I guess the answer is yes. But my response would be that I don't see our leaders as being people who expose things. I would rather them be leaders who heal things. And while President Trump's rhetoric and actions have maybe exposed some raw feelings on race and class in this country, and he tapped into those in order to win an election, when you become the president, your job, I think, is to heal those and to aspire to make the country better and to motivate folks who maybe have racial issues, maybe have class issues, maybe have some angst about the economy. Your job, I think, as president is to lift those people up and get them to work together so that everyone is better off. dividing us and getting us to pick on each other with these bullies-type tactics and tweets, I think is very unproductive. As far as the second question, I think you're right. I think it is time for some new faces, some new names. I certainly think Hillary Clinton was unable to motivate a lot of Democrats and a lot of people, and that was part of the reason she lost. There are other reasons. But you're right about millennials. I think millennials are very socially liberal, open to a lot of different things. I think a lot of these liberal issues, quote unquote, have been solved, and millennials are ready to move on to the next thing. But millennials also, I think, have a higher threshold of accountability through social media. I think they feel like they can hold leaders more accountable because they have better records than they used to. And so regardless of party, you better put up or shut up, because I think millennials do a good job of keeping track.
877-217-5757 and 297-5633 for Jim Nickel, veteran lobbyist and former chair of the Louisiana Democratic Party. David in 70808.
My zip code.
David?
Yes. I wanted to ask Jim if he thinks anybody with the Louisiana delegation would have the decency to say the same thing that Jeff Flake. What will it? Will we be the last in the country to recognize the presidency for what it is?
That's a great question. You know, I think Senator Flake, if you don't know, is a very devout Mormon, a man of tremendous faith, and who I think has a bedrock principles that he believes in as a Mormon that I think probably nurtured and gave birth to what he did. I think he felt very strongly about some of the moral direction of this country, and that's why that's part of the reason he spoke out. I think it'll be interesting to see if some of our leaders from Louisiana will also speak out. It may take an event. It may take, unfortunately, some bad event to Louisiana to have a lack of response from President Trump for them to stand up to the president, or if at some point there's some exposure of some illegality or some problem with the Trump administration and it's so inevitable that they have to speak out. But at this point, I don't anticipate it.
John Kennedy, the junior senator who was just elected a little over 11 months ago, is apparently running for governor. All indications are that he will be on the ballot in 2019. He's run for many offices through the years, and I would imagine he would be a formidable candidate if he makes that choice, Jim.
Oh, no question. He's a very, very prolific fundraiser. He's been on the state stage for a long time. He knows how to speak to Louisiana voters. That's clear from his success at the ballot box, and he will be a formidable candidate if he chooses to run for governor, no question.
But he has stayed close to President Trump.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's not apparently not a problem in Louisiana, at least at this point. It may be an asset.
Especially if you're a Republican.
Correct. I haven't seen any Trump approval ratings in Louisiana. I've seen national ones. I have not seen any. I saw some last year.
I saw one last night nationally in Fox. News has him at 38%.
Yeah. I don't know what his Louisiana numbers are. I saw him about a year ago, and they're still pretty decent. So, I mean, Senator Kennedy Treasurer Kennedy, Senator Kennedy has always been a pretty independent operator, so he'll find his way whether Trump's up or down. He'll be a formidable candidate, no question.
And John Bel Edwards is running for re-election, and Jim, if he were to win, and of course that's his intent, he would be the first Democrat in 44 years to get two consecutive terms as governor in Louisiana.
Wow. You always have those stats. Yeah.
1975 was the last time.
Well, and look, he's got a chance. I think any time a governor is an incumbent, he or she has a chance to get reelected because you have that power as the governor. And also, I think Governor Edwards, his approval ratings are very good right now. You know, I've always said I can go home, and if my wife tells me, you know, you're wrong, it doesn't bother me because I'm wrong all the time. If I ever go home and my wife says, you don't care, that's a whole different story. And I think what Governor Edwards has going for him right now is whether you agree or disagree with him on issues, I think his care for the people of Louisiana through his reaction to the different natural catastrophes, through his diligent work in trying to solve problems, his lack of, at least at times, not to be partisan about things, I think people in Louisiana think he cares about them. And as long as he can maintain that image, he's got a fighting chance.
Paul in Opelousas. Paul, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana with Jim Nickel.
Good morning, Jim.
Good morning.
Good morning, Jim. Question. State treasurer, candidate in the runoff, Mr. Edwards, mm-hmm. did he seek, if you know it, did he seek endorsement from the state Democratic committee? And if he didn't, why didn't or why aren't they endorsing him stronger? Because he made it in the runoff. Thank you very much.
I do not know. I'm not involved in the party organization. I'm still a Democrat, but I'm not involved in the party. I don't know. I did read in the paper where I think the executive committee endorsed him. They may not have a state mm-hmm. central committee meeting in time to endorse him, but I don't know.
He's running essentially a stealth campaign, and we've tried, for example, to get him on this show a few times, and he has opted not to even return a phone call, and that's not generally – you know, somebody's running for treasurer. Like the three major Republicans, they were pretty easy gets. They
sure.
were here like, when do you want me?
Yeah.
But because he was a Democrat mm-hmm. and the only Democrat on the ballot, he got 31% of the votes. That tells you there is a base
sure.
that will go to the Democratic Party anytime, any place sure. in this state.
Yeah, and it's been consistent, and you can grow it. There's no question. That's the base there. I mean, I think you
the
can
bottom.
The bottom, so to speak, and you can grow from there. But you got to work it, and you got to be on radio shows, and you got to return phone calls, and you got to raise money. And look, it's tough out there in politics. If he's going to have a fighting chance, he's got to get on the Jim Meekster. I'm sorry, on the
Talk Louisiana
with Jim Meekster.
Well, and other shows as well. I don't think he's doing anything. I don't think it's just
seen him
me.
I haven't seen him on any media.
No. But John Schroeder got in a runoff, which means he'll be the next treasurer with 96,000 votes. Think about that. He won essentially a statewide election at 3 million registered voters in our state with 96,000 votes.
Yeah, Bud Corson, my business partner, and I were talking about that. He's run mm-hmm. a lot of statewide campaigns as well, and we were sort of scratching our heads about you get elected with 96,000 votes. It's amazing because it used to take a lot more than that, but you know, that happens with special elections. I'm kind of on board with Secretary of State Shedler. I think we need to look at moving some of these statewide offices to some appointed position until you get to a full election so that more voters participate. But, you know, it leads me to my next point, and I probably shouldn't go here, but I'm going to say it. You know, people are very upset about people kneeling down during the national anthem and other acts of defiance, all of them perfectly allowable in our free society. Hey, man, go vote. You want to be patriotic? Go vote. That's one of the most patriotic things you can do. And I have a feeling a lot of people out there that are worked up on social media about kneeling down maybe ought to take some time, get off Facebook, and go vote.
Only 38% of the Louisiana voters, registered voters, cast ballots in the governor's election 2 years ago. And that yep. was an important race with two distinct personalities.
Yep. Well, I think it speaks to our political rhetoric. Unfortunately, I think anger is a motivator now more than hope. And unfortunately, people want to go out and vote against things more than they want to vote for things.
Jim Nickel is with us for another segment. If you'd like to join the conversation, 877-217-5757 or 297-5633 in Baton Rouge. We're back after this pause on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana on WRKF. Your number is 877-217-5757. Locally, it's 297-5633. For Jim Nickel, who, along with Bud Corson, they're lobbyists. You see them often at the state capitol where they are patrolling the halls. And I'm aware that you had a lot to do with lobbying for the criminal justice package that got bipartisan support at the legislature. I'm sure I'm preaching to the choir, but did you think it was a positive step for our state?
It was, and it took a lot of people. And, Bud and I were fortunate to work with the Pew Center, and there were a lot of folks involved, including the governor on point. There were a number of Republicans. Senator Vitter was lobbying on behalf of some of the package. You had the Christian Coalition Family Forum lobbying on it. Mm-hmm. Mr. Mills was part of that group. So it was very bipartisan. It was very, very nice thing to see for people to come together to do something about our recidivism, about our high prison rate in Louisiana. And look, this is not going to be easy. Now that we start, the bills have passed, the laws are in place, and now the practice comes of releasing folks over a period of time, nonviolent criminals. We need to be very diligent. We spend way too much money keeping people in prison and not enough money reforming people. every state that's done this, and there's been some deep South states that have done this, Mississippi, Georgia, they have seen their crime rates go down, not up. And so I would just beg the patience of your listeners, of everybody in Louisiana, as we go through this process, you may hear a little bad story here or something there. Overall, this is going to be a very good thing for our state. It's going to put money into rehab and to education and helping people get back into society as opposed to just keeping people in jail. The bad guys and the bad girls are going to stay in jail. The folks who have a chance to get a second chance, we're going to give them that second chance. We're going to use your tax dollars better, and we're going to start spending money on educating people and not just housing people.
How did you get Senator Vitter aboard? Because during the campaign, he was talking about John Bel Edwards, who's in favor of this, getting these thugs, as he called them, out of jail.
Yeah. Well, he was retained. I'm not sure who retained him. But, again, I will tell you that you had a very, very cross-section of groups. I mean, I think the Koch brothers and very conservative Koch brothers, they were involved. They believe in this. They see the waste. They see the amount of tax dollars going into this prison system that we're not getting the results we should. So I'm sure he was attracted by some of those groups that it recruited him to get involved.
Elise on Perkins. Elise, you're on Talk Louisiana with Jim Nickel.
Oh, good morning, Jim and Jim. I'm Jim Nickel. I'm the mother of one of your proteges, Bert.
Oh, yes,
and,
yes.
I agree with you so much that if you don't vote, you have no right to complain. And, you know, I keep my senators and my representative on speed dial, so when I'm sitting in terrible Baton Rouge traffic, I can call and express my opinion.
Well, you must
thank
be
you
able
both
to,
for what y'all do.
Well, thank you. You must get a lot of you must make a lot of phone calls because there's certainly a lot of traffic in Baton Rouge. But all
I
the best
to
you and give Bert my best. One day I'll tell the Bert Kaufman story on air when Jim gives me time.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you, Elise. Dan downtown. Hi, Dan. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Yes. Can the Democrats exploit the so-called pro-military Republicans favoring the banking industry to the disadvantage of veterans and other citizens with their vote yesterday to deprive consumers of their day in court when cheated by the likes of Wells Fargo?
That was a 51-50 vote.
Yeah. This has to do with the arbitration rule and allowing people to, I guess, group together to sue financial institutions and lenders. And it was a rule passed by the Consumer Finance, whatever that board is, and then the Senate overruled it. My understanding is there are some predatory lending practices dealing with the military that need to be addressed. Whether this was the way to do it, I don't know.
877-217-5757. Still time to get in with Jim Nickel, who is a prominent lobbyist. And in the age of term limits, are lobbyists more powerful at the Capitol than before?
Yes. Lobbyists and staff, I mean, what we've done with term limits is we're moving out all the institutional knowledge, and I've never been a fan of term limits. We have them. You run every 4 years. Every institution in our society, churches, banks, schools, universities, they all reward seniority. They take people who know what they're doing and they move them up through the ladder so that the organizations have experience and knowledge. And in our government, as soon as you know what's going on, we tell you to leave. It's a bad idea. We see it in practice. It was part of the contract with America. They never passed it in Washington. We passed it in Louisiana. And I think it actually takes away the power of the voter more than it empowers voters. And it's been a mistake, in my opinion.
Jim doubles among his many duties as the spotter for LSU football. He's done that for 8 seasons now, now with Chris Blair after having done it with Jim Hawthorne. But I know you take great pride in that assignment as well.
Well, it's a lot of fun. I sit next to the voice of the Tigers. It used to be Jim Hawthorne. Now it's Chris Blair. And I point at who's in the game and who's made the tackle and who's made the kick and then remind them that we're in the Capital One red zone or whatever corporate sponsor is for a particular play. And it's been a lot of fun to spend time with Doug Morrow, who's been an All-American at LSU, and Patrick Wright, the stat guy. And it's kind of a little LSU family, and we travel together on the road. And it's great to have a little front seat to what is, I think, a great pastime in Louisiana, and that's LSU football. And my hat's off to the team. They certainly, after the loss to Mississippi State and then the loss to Troy, could have really thrown in the towel. I've seen teams quit before. This one didn't, And as a result, I think everybody's in a little bit better mood. The Saints are winning. The Tigers are winning. It's pretty outside, and God bless America.
I see LSU's a 24-point underdog at Alabama.
Yeah, I was going to guess 16, 18, 24. You know, we'll see. We get, you know, that's why they play the game, right?
There you go. There you go. A listener notes, this is Scott, about the change we were talking about. I was talking about from 76 to 16, and you said 40 years is a long time. Well, Scott says in another 40 years, Texas and Florida may be majority-minority states. Mm-hmm. That could certainly change the political winds in those states.
No question. I think Texas sooner, and I think what we all need to watch is the Supreme Court and their decisions on some of this redistricting.
Gerrymandering, yeah.
If we see the court rule that these districts need to be a little bit more compact and not as, I guess, snake, whatever you want to call it, and we get more compact districts, we may get more moderate districts, and I think that may moderate our politics as far as mm-hmm. the House in Washington. But as far as presidential politics, it's a matter of time before Texas and Florida become, and those are big states with electoral votes, become more Democrat.
Well, if Garrett Graves had the Southern University area in his district, that would be a competitive district. But that was moved, and it was done so to protect the 6th district for a Republican. It was moved into Cedric Richmond's district.
Right.
So he represents both airports, the New Orleans and the Baton Rouge airport.
Right.
And almost nothing in between. It's just a little issue. You called it a snake.
Yeah. And we have those on the state level as well. There are a lot of districts like that.
Richard in Lafayette. Richard, you're on Talk Louisiana with Jim Nichol.
Yeah, Jim, I wanted to ask you, you made a comment about why you supported the, or you didn't support term limits.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering if everything that you said, does that apply to governors and to presidents as well?
Well, I think there is a difference between executive power and legislative power, and I would not have a problem with governors getting reelected as long as they can win. Clearly, the Constitution doesn't allow that, and we passed that. But I do differentiate in my experience in government over the last 30 years, executive power versus legislative power. I'm okay with it more on the executive side, but frankly, I'm all about go vote. I mean, you know, every 4 years these people are up and you can go do something about it. And so I wouldn't have a problem with that either, but the chances of that changing are slim and none, probably just like the legislative.
I am surprised the state Republican Party, which now controls the state legislature, hasn't moved to have closed primaries.
Yeah, me too. I mean, I think they probably see some danger in it somewhere, and that's probably why they're not doing it. But you know, I don't think voters in Louisiana would embrace it. Maybe that's why. I think voters in Louisiana like the ability to go vote for whoever they like.
And some other states are talking about doing it our way as well.
Correct. California's an open primary state.
And now we have this situation where Jeff Flake, he's not running in Arizona, so Arizona will either elect a more conservative
Correct.
Republican or a Democrat, and Arizona generally is a state that likes moderate Republicans, but they're probably not going to get one.
Probably not going to get one, and I don't know who the Democrat is. I'm not following that race, whether he or she has a chance, but you're correct. They will do that. We're going to see that in Alabama, certainly.
And John Breaux, you campaigned for him in 1986. He beat Henson Moore in a memorable U.S. Senate race. He was a moderate Democrat.
Correct.
Today, he told me when Mary Landrieu was running in 2014 that he didn't think he could win in this environment.
Well, I mean, I remember the 98 race, which was the last one he had in Louisiana, and looking at some of the results, even though he won handily against Jim Donlin, there were some
parishes.
Tea leaves in there and some things in there that led us to believe that there were troubled waters ahead.
And he never ran again.
His
successor was David Bruce Vitter.
There you go.
There you go. Jim, it's always good to talk with you. Thanks for your insights. And
Well, I miss being with you and your listeners, and look forward to doing it again. And I hope everybody enjoys this amazing weather. It's my daughter's home from college. The weather's good. Life is good. And I'm going to go try to enjoy it.
And the World Series is tied 1-1.
How about
Houston
that,
and
huh?
Los Angeles. We'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place. For Ali Baltazar, I'm Jim Engster. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned.
For a podcast of today's show, go to WRKF.org or find the Talk Louisiana podcast on the WRKF app. We welcome your feedback and topic suggestions. Email us at talk@talklouisiana.org. Talk Louisiana is a production of WRKF in Baton Rouge.